More protests are planned this week. It's Pancake Day on Tuesday, so...
We thought it'd be a great idea to show the public and the government the value of machinery and how much capital investment is needed to put a simple 8 or 10 inch pancake on a plate.
We've a monthly update from the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network. We'll hear about the latest fly tipping numbers and look ahead to another big farming show on this week.
The Low Carbon Agriculture Show is all about how we can produce food sustainably with a lower impact on the environment and on the climate as possible.
Plus a look at the markets, and Sean's here talking slugs, grass weed control, manganese, nitrogen, and asking, is it time to drill those spring crops?
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Good morning. Hope you've had a good week. Welcome to the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, the 2nd of March, 2025. I'm Steve Orchard. Lots to get through this week, so let's crack on with fly tipping. The latest numbers are out, and Kath Crowther, Regional Director at the CLA, they don't look good.
So we know that last year there were 1.15 million incidents on public land. That was a 6% increase from the year before. So that's costing the public purse a huge amount. But the reality and the scale of the problem is much worse, given that a significant number of fly tipping incidents happen on privately owned land. And the fact they're not recorded means that we don't understand the severity and the economic impact, as well as the toll on people's, it's their livelihoods, but also just, you know, seeing that across your land and dealing with it all the time, they are victims. And we recently surveyed our members and 90% of them said that they had been a victim of fly tipping in the last year, with many targeted multiple times each month. And farmers have to pay themselves to clear up that fly tipped waste. And if they don't clear it up, they could be liable. They could be prosecuted themselves, even though they're the victim.
And you talked about the stuff that's dumped at the side of the road. Some of this is not nice stuff, is it? You've got hazardous chemicals, asbestos, all sorts of things like that there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just pulled over on the side of the road to take some photos, given the stats right today, because I drove past a fridge freezer, some car seats, an office chair, as well as a load of what looked like dog poo bags and beer bottles, etc. But we're also seeing hazardous waste, asbestos, chemicals. So we've had a member call us a few days ago. They'd had a load of cannabis on their land. So that is risking the safety of people and animals. And some of it requires very costly expert treatment to remove it.
You say there's the cost, there's the inconvenience. Some people might regard this as a victimless crime, which it most certainly isn't. But we don't seem to be seeing the treatment of offenders actually increasing. Fines seem to be down.
I know that was really unfortunate when we got the information today. So the average fine is just £500. Clearly, we need to impose and enforce penalties that better reflect the seriousness of the crime. So seizure of vehicles, the fines technically should be unlimited, but we're not seeing that. And then the fixed penalty notices. There's then not enough of the fixed penalty notice is issued. The maximum amount that can be issued on those has gone up, but we're not seeing the fines increase. So it's worth the risk of people doing it, because if they're not going to be, or if they've only got a fine of 500, then
I mean, A, we know in rural areas the difficulty is catching them in the first place, but B, a truckload of industrial waste would cost them an awful lot of money to dispose of. And if they're only going to get fined £500, yeah, not condoning it, but it's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it?
Exactly that. We must see the fines increased and other penalties being issued. We have been calling on local authorities, the Environment Agency and police to commit stronger action against increases of fly tipping, and seeing more connection between those authorities, because unfortunately it can often fall between the three. And also, I would say that please, if any of your listeners are getting rid of waste, make sure that they check whoever they're asking to take it away has a waste carrier's license. You have a duty of care to make sure that your waste is disposed of properly, and you can be prosecuted if you don't check that they have a proper waste carrier's license, because often people will have someone knock on their door, you know, a white van man knock on the door saying, oh, I see you having your kitchen done. Do you want me to take it away for you? Well, check where they're going to be taking it.
So the CLA is calling for some better training, some more stringent fines and so on to make sure there's an effective deterrent. Do you want any input into this from listeners?
We just need to make sure that the seriousness is understood. Please report if you see any waste fly tipped. If you see it being fly tipped, then that is a crime in action. So you should be calling that in. And we need the resources to be put to the police and to local authorities as well to make sure that, you know, it is properly understood.
All right, Kath, it's a bit like hair coursing. It's another scourge of the countryside, I'm afraid. But sad to see that the figures continue to get worse. Kath Crowther from the CLA, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Dave.
This week sees another big farming show. Stoneleigh plays home to a show with a definite theme. Organiser of the Low Carbon Ag Show, Olivia Midgley. Tell us more.
Yeah, that's right, Steve. The Low Carbon Agriculture Show is all about how we can produce food sustainably with as you know, a lower impact on the environment and on the climate as possible. So what you get over the 2 days, it's the 5th and 6th of March at Stoneleigh, and what you get over those 2 days is a kind of one-stop shop. So you've got a packed seminar program full of debates, which, you know, you have these fantastic speakers having these really good debates on everything from, you know, how to nurture and care for the soils to electric transport. And then you can also then go and look around the exhibitors who are already there, so or who are also there. So, you know, for example, last year, an exhibitor said to me, a visitor said to me, it was really good to kind of hear the debate on, you know, food security and then go and talk to those people who are exhibiting the sorts of kit and technology that could actually help us produce food with a lower carbon footprint, essentially.
You're talking about solutions, you're talking about practices, and as you say, there is the equipment there to have a look at and plenty of tech, plenty of shiny new tech to go and have a look around.
There is, Steve. And I think that's really important, isn't it? You know, we are such incredible innovators in this country. And, you know, the technology and innovation is so exciting. And to see what's coming through at quite a rapid pace is really encouraging, isn't it? To see that, you know, we really are world leaders in food production and how we can really be even better. And as part of that, you know, it's so important to reduce that impact on the environment. And, you know, a lot of the farmers that we talk to at Farmers Guardian, you know, they see the value in this stuff. They want to reduce their impact and they want to produce more with less. You know, we've seen these trends of regenerative farming, which a lot of your listeners will be really aware of. And, you know, that's exciting too. It's this kind of trend that is really flowing through the industry. And I think there's just more awareness now, I think, of kind of what we need to do to be better.
But there are opportunities to find out solutions, you know, funding opportunities, how to be profitable and work a little bit smarter and so on, but actually combine food and nature together. And if somebody's never been, maybe they've never really thought along the low carbon route, it's kind of a time to find out what it's all about and then make your own mind up.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think with all of our AgriConnect shows, it's about kind of bringing those thought leaders together and the people that are, you know, are in the game, and then putting all that out in front of farmers so that farmers can really go and understand, learn, find out more, ask questions. You know, the seminar theatre at Low Carbon Ag is always quite something, because we've got the wireless headphones, so it looks like people are at a silent disco, but they're all kind of listening intently to the the PAC speaker program, which is always is quite amusing, really. But it works really well because it means that you can actually walk around the show while listening to the speakers as well. And I just want to tell you about one of the opening seminar that I'm involved in, and it's, you know, can farming save the planet? And I honestly think that it can, but we have to be able to join the dots between everything that farmers produce, but also how we can make space for nature, for housing, for nurturing our landscapes and our soils, and how we talk about it as, you know, as quite holistically, rather than pitting one thing against the other, which unfortunately at the moment, well, I suppose it's been the same for the last few years, hasn't it, that actually farming is seen as the problem child when I truly believe it's the solution.
And we're going to talk energy, we'll find out more about the regulations, there are markets for carbon and this kind of thing. And as ever with shows like this, there's an opportunity to connect. There's a bit of a social opportunity there, isn't there, as well?
Yeah, I think that's so important, isn't it? Especially at this time, you know, where everything seems to be overshadowed by the inheritance tax issue at the moment. You know, the NFU conference this week was dominated by that. And unfortunately, you know, while the government's announced grants, capital grants are coming back this year, which is great news. You know, they want farmers to invest, but, you know, at the moment, the mood is fairly low, isn't it? So I would say that the events that we're putting on with Farmers Guardian AgriConnect really are an opportunity for the farming community to get together. And there's just no more important time than this. And I think that, you know, farmers have been seen, you know, recently to really stick together and stand united. And I think, you know, the Low Carbon Ag Show is another great opportunity to just come together.
Absolutely. Talks, exhibitors, workshops, socials, going to be a busy couple of days. Just remind us then when, where do we go for tickets and information?
Yeah, so it's Wednesday and Thursday, the 5th and 6th of March. And everything you need to know is on our website, which is lowcarbonag.co.uk.
All right, and we'll report back from the show next week on the farming programme. Olivia, thank you once again.
Cheers, Steve.
To the fields we go now. Still not dry, Sean.
Yes, good morning, Steve. More rain through last week then, including a very unwelcome 5 mil on Wednesday. So that's done very little to improve ground conditions, despite noticeably increasing day length. Daylight increases by about 10 minutes a day this time of year. And unfortunately, with fields still sitting soggy underneath, even on the sandy stuff, the last thing we needed was more rain. It soon needs to stop raining, warm up, lose that cloud cover and just get a bit windy and warm, so that when we do get dry days, they're drying days. That's what we've been lacking really for about the last 20 weeks, drying conditions. So slug damage still apparent, troubling and potentially devastating in some of the backward later drilled bits. So do keep your eyes peeled. Don't just assume that the later drilled wheat crops are slow to emerge because it's been cold. Have a dig about in case it is slugs. And in the recently emerged bits, keep having a poke about for that slug grazing, because these crops aren't grown particularly quickly in these conditions. The soils have now fallen back to 5 degrees and below with that return to colder conditions in the middle of the week. So the struggling crops are really very vulnerable to slug damage. Of course, in wet conditions, even the better quality wet process slug pellets will disintegrate quite rapidly if they're applied onto wet soil or if they get rained on. So if you can, try and wait until the surface is dry, and ideally for when there's a forecast of a dry night to follow. I know it's not ideal, but they're not cheap, so you've got to get the most out of them, and that'll be the best way to get the best out of them. Grass weed control in crops treated pre-em last autumn, pretty good, I think, at the moment, but it's not too late for another spring emergence to come past these applied residuals, which will have moved in the profiles since they were sprayed last October. We've had a bit over 14 inches of rain since the beginning of October, and 10 inches of rain delivers one Olympic-sized swimming pool of water on every hectare. So that's particularly relevant where plant populations are a little bit dodgy and variable. So make the call on a field-by-field basis if you are in that position. More complicated, I think, are some of those fields that were drilled maybe mid-November and they still haven't been sprayed with anything. Some of those are now looking a little bit moth-eaten and patchy. and have significant levels of grass weeds, including blackgrass in many of them. So the fields need assessing on their individual merit. You still have time for herbicides. Flufenicet can go on up to 3 tillers. Sinmethylin is okay until growth stage 30. But that's not a cheap option. So do make sure that the crop warrants that level of spend and that the blackgrass in that crop isn't so big it's just going to shrug it off. It worked reasonably well for me post-M last year, sinmethylin, and the year before, to be fair. But blackgrass does need to be small or preferable yet to emerge to get the best out of it, and don't expect miracles. Where the grass weeds are still small, as I say, residuals will still give some control. Sinmethylin, ethafumisate, probably the better options, but these are not magic options, so do speak to your advisor and make sure you manage your expectations. Manganese deficiency is showing up now in the usual areas, so make sure any manganese, magnesium, sulfur, nitrogen, in fact any nutrient deficiency has been dealt with before you go bunging herbicides on these fields. Bits of Optimiser, Frit Fly, and even Wheat Bull Fly out there to be found as well. Early nitrogen and the rolls, probably the only real option for Wheat Bull Fly control now, rolling, yeah, right. Obviously, wheats and barleys are now going to benefit from some nitrogen and sulphur, but there's not much you could have done to get that on before last week, really, nor would you have wanted to. So 60 to 80 kilos of nitrogen plant food now, depending upon soil type, soil nitrogen supply and previous cropping, etc., and soil conditions. The earlier drilled, more forward crops are the least urgent in that plan. And remember, those smaller 2 or 3 leaf backward crops aren't going to be able to take up much nitrogen very quickly yet because of the similarly backward root system. So little and often still makes sense on those backward bits. 40 odd kilos of nitrogen now still the best bet there, I think. But again, treat on a field by field basis. And if the weather and the travelling delays continue and those crops move into spring growth, then make sure that they're covered too and they're not being held back by a lack of nitrogen and sulfur. Nitrogen deficiency, sulfur deficiency, still not really showing in the field, but a little bit of rapid growth and we'll soon start to pick that up. So as soon as you can go, do go, I think, with that. Spring barley, spring wheat, spring oats, spring beans, still waiting for conditions to be good enough to go and drill them. Spring wheat tends to be the most adversely affected by later drilling, so prioritise that as soon as drilling is going to go. Spring oats, spring barley, they're much more forgiving of later drilling if you need to do that. Seed supplies, price is stupidly high out there, so it's going to be tempting to cut back on seed rates, but that is a false economy because later drilled crops have much less time to tiller, so a good robust seed rate is going to be crucial this year, just as it is in any year. Spring bean drilling, also a drilling priority because the earlier drilled crops tend to be far more drought tolerant later thanks to a much better developed root system. Yes, I did say drought, you can always see it coming, can't you? I'll leave sugar beet until next week. There aren't going to be many fine firm seed beds out here to trouble us with sugar beet drilling just yet, but thanks to the frosty December, January and first half of February, I'd be surprised if the virus forecast from Rothamsted predicts double figures of virus risk in untreated crops compared to that 83% they forecast for last season, or indeed aphid flight much before mid to late May. They started around the 20th of March to fly last year, so fingers crossed that our first season without cruiser since that debacle of 2020 is going to be helped by all of that cold weather we've taken since the beginning of December. So March came in like a lamb, cold, bright, drying out and a little bit unsteady as it staggered to its feet, but that's the best we can ever hope for in any year. So top dressing the first likely big job, drilling spring wheats and spring beans, your then priority as soon as spring drilling conditions materialise, and get on your knees and start praying for a bit of warmer, drier weather. The swallows are going to be here soon and we do need to have things ready for them. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks, Sean. Still to come, how are the livestock and grain markets doing, and how is the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network doing? The first of our new regular updates from LRSN next.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
This is the Farming Programme podcast for Sunday, the 2nd of March 2025. I'm Steve Orchard. Every month from now on, we'll hear about the work of two hugely important charities supporting farming and the rural community. The FCN next month, but first today, the Lincolnshire Rural Support Network, LRSN. They provide help, advice, support for health and mental health, and a helpline for those in need of guidance. Head of charity Amy Thomas joins us today. Amy, are you seeing your helpline getting busier?
We are seeing lots of people feeling really anxious at the moment. I think, you know, a lot of people feeling that farming's had a bit of a battering, and that is sort of coming out in the types of requests that we're getting. So we have been busy, but we've also been doing some fun things. So we've got Women in Wellies, which is our project that takes women sort of off farm and out of the workplace and gives them a chance to connect socially and meet one of our nurses. So we've had some quite fun things happening there. And we've got a new project just starting with young people.
Right. Tell me about that, because when you and I met at the Lincolnshire Farming Conference the other day, the theme there was inspiring the next generation. And you're doing what for young people?
We are trying to support young people and help them to increase their resilience, recognise what well-being looks like for them, so that as they enter the industry and work in the industry and develop, they can look after their own well-being. I think we see so many farmers and growers in Lincolnshire, they look after themselves and their well-being. It's at the absolute bottom of the pile, looking after their land, their crops, their animals, whatever else it might be. It always comes above looking after themselves. So what we want to do is support younger people in the industry to understand what well-being looks like, how to prioritise that, and how to be resilient, I suppose. So we're really excited to get started. We're going to be working a lot with Lincolnshire Young Farmers, but we're also working with Rice Home College and any young person really, aged over 16, who live, work, wants to work in the farming community.
Now we'll give out the contact numbers and details at the end, but from what you're saying about more and more people getting in touch with you, is that related to what came out in the budget? Have things changed since then?
Interestingly, we've not seen any direct requests for support related to the implications of the budget. I think in part that's because people are really waiting for the detail, aren't they? You know, they're waiting to see what the implications might be for them personally and how they might navigate it. What we are seeing a lot of are family and relationship tensions and generally business issues, actually. I think it's been a really tough year or two, in fact, for farming. So we have seen quite a lot of business issues, but it's those tensions that inevitably result in family and relationship difficulties and issues, succession issues. That's always something that is on our mind. I don't doubt that we will begin to see more as a result of the budget, but just now I think people are really just waiting to hear or understand better what the implications are going to be for them.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit early for that. And as the effects start to filter through and when farms do have to be sold and so on for inheritance tax, I'm sure you'll get more calls for that. So Health Hut continues to be busy?
The Health Hut does continue to be busy. So we do around 24 events every year. I think this year's programme is already pretty much booked up, which is really exciting. We're only in February and we're taking it out to farm sales and seed trials and tractor runs, a Lincolnshire show, out in as many different places as we can, really, across the whole county.
And this basically offers a quick health check to enable farmers, members of the rural community, to get blood pressure checked and so on, and just make sure that they are, if there's anything up, maybe they know about it early.
Absolutely. It's all about prevention, isn't it, with things like that. And really excitingly, we've got more opportunities for people to have those health checks now, because we've just opened a brand new clinic in the north of the county. So it's going to rotate fortnightly between Brigg and Corringham at the Peacock and Binnington depots, and is another opportunity for people in the north of the county to pop in and have those regular checks, make sure that everything is as it should be. But also a chance, if you've got something you're worried about, just to have a chat to one of the nurses. You know, they are very skilled in their fields, but they're also skilled listeners and are always happy to have a chat.
And this isn't restricted to the farming community. Basically, anybody in the rural community can come in for one of these checks.
Yeah, anyone with a connection into agriculture. So it might be that, you know, you work at the tractor dealership, or maybe, you know, you work for another company that has a you know, supports the rural community, or perhaps, you know, you're a relative of somebody in that community. But yeah, absolutely. The nurses don't turn people away generally.
OK, so we talked about Women in Wellies. What's this Summer 25 Challenge?
Well, we have been very busy. You'll know because we've spoken that last year was our 25th year. And we did put together a bit of a challenge to keep people busy, really, during the summer months, particularly families where they've got children and everyone's really busy with harvest. And it was great fun. We gave them lots of different things to do, 25 things over the summer months, from, I don't know, jumping in puddles through to making a poster for LRSA and all sorts of things, really, just designed to be a bit of fun. And we had the forms and things ready at the Lincolnshire Show, so we'll have them again this year for people to join in. It's just a bit of fun. Keep LRSN in the forefront of people's minds at a time when people are very busy and feeling quite worn down, but also try and keep those young ones quite active over the summer holidays.
Lighten the mood a little bit. Now, I'm guessing, because we kind of have this bit of the conversation virtually every time, you need more funds, you need more volunteers. Is that still the case?
We do. In particular, at the moment, we're looking for volunteers to join our helpline. So our helpline is manned by volunteers. It's not an advice line in that our volunteers on that line don't give support. What they do is they act as a bit of a reception service. So they're quite often the first port of call that people have when they want some help. So to be a good helpline volunteer, you need to be someone who's really good at listening, someone with some empathy, and someone who's not afraid of having a conversation over the phone. So if that's something that sounds appealing, we are looking for more volunteers, the more the merrier, really, because the more volunteers we have on that helpline, the less we're asking you to give in terms of your time. We can share that rota out a little bit more. And in terms of funding, we are, you know, very fortunate that we're supported really well by the farming community and all of the businesses that are part of that. But yeah, we are always looking for people to raise awareness of what we do, raise funds for us, you know, maybe help us reach new audiences. We're particularly keen to try and raise awareness in the south of the county. It's an area we know we need to be more visible. So, you know, it, particularly businesses and people based in the south, if there's something that you can do to help us raise awareness of what we do and maybe raise some funds along the way, that would be fantastic. And we'd love to hear from you.
Well, LRSN, as we know, does a fantastic job in supporting so many people across the rural community. So let's just wrap it up by giving us those contact details, please, Amy.
Thank you, Steve. So our helpline is open 8 till 8 every single day of the year. And the number is 0800 138 1710.
And of course, you can get details at lrsn.co.uk if you want to have a look at what's going on. Amy, long may your work continue. Thanks for joining us again on the Farming Programme this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock and from Louth Market auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Sheep week this week with the prime hogs having an SQQ of 329.58 pence per kilo. And an all-in average pounds per head of £157.04. A very mixed show with not many lambs forward in the SQQ bracket this week, which is obviously is reflected in this week's average. Saying that, the pounds per head were well up and very similar on the week. Joint top spot went to W.R. Hanson, son of Coningsby, and A.J. Colson, sons of Osgoby, at £182. H. Smith and Sons of Theddlethorpe topped the pence per kilo at 350 pence per kilo for some 42 kilo Beltex crosses. On to the cull ewes, a super trade again this week with an average of £156.69. Soaring to the top spot was C. Norwood of Skegness at £260 for a Texel cross ewe. On to the store lambs, an average of £66.32. A very, very plain show of store lambs forward and a mixed show with 90% on offer longer keep lambs. Top pen at £87 for Isabel Roberts of Howsham for some Texel cross lambs. A reminder, some upcoming store cattle sales. The prices have never been higher in the store cattle and all cattle, really. Friday the 4th of April, we've got our spring prize show and sale of store cattle. Entry forms are available on the website, or please do not hesitate to give myself a call. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. And with a look at the grain markets, Open Fields, Jerome Fielder. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning, Steve. Unfortunately, the grain market is far from an ideal and feels more like a perfect storm. The wheat market in particular has dropped to contract lows on the London wheat futures for May 25 at £177.50. After seeing a range-bound wheat market over the past 2 months, trading between £185 and £195 on the May futures, it was a little alarming to see the market drop out of the bottom of this range. So why is this? One reason is slightly technical, as both merchants and consumers do not want to own UK futures wheat. Why? Because they are too expensive. Most futures wheat stores are in Kent and East Anglia, known for being surplus areas for grain production. The price of May 25 on Friday morning's open was £177.50, yet the ex-farm price in East Norfolk for May is around £170 a tonne. Therefore, there is no incentive for a merchant or consumer, or farmer for that matter, to own expensive futures wheat, as if they had to sell that wheat at current prices to a mill, they would make a significant loss. Therefore, the price keeps dropping. So many are now starting to ask the question, where is the bottom? Chartist traders would suggest the next point of resistance is £175 a tonne on the May 25 futures. Let's see, but it's likely that any lift will be driven by a rally on new crop, as November 25 is already £14 a tonne higher than May 25. In terms of physical trade, there continues to be encouraging signs as corn exports continue to flow out of the US at pace. Another encouraging bit of news is that according to one grain analyst, Russia have only 10 million tonnes left to export this year, which is half what they had left a year ago. Unfortunately, the US seems to be plugging the gap at present. It's reaching that time when the US farmer decides what to plant this spring. Will it be corn or will it be soybeans? A major factor in the farmer's decision making is the price of both soybeans and corn. This year, the corn price is attracting more attention, as the price is the closest it's been to soybeans for 4 years. Why does this matter? Well, corn is a feed grain, so more corn suppresses feed wheat prices globally. The USDA estimates that farmers will plant 94 million acres of corn, up 3.4 million acres from the 2024-25 season. While soybean planted acres are forecast at 84 million acres, down 1.3 million acres. The USDA also predicts a record production of corn, but this is largely governed by record crop yields, which isn't a given. The crop hasn't even been planted yet. The oilseed market feels a little more stable in recent weeks, but geopolitical events such as trade tariffs on Canadian oil are keeping traders nervous. Soybeans in particular are feeling pressure from the South American harvest, which is widely forecast to reach a record volume. In terms of physical trade, feed wheat is still easy to move, as is feed barley, but milling wheat will struggle to find a buyer until June/July, and it's a similar situation on milling oats. It's a struggle to find a bid for malting barley either. Now for your ex-farm grain values. Feed wheat is trading at £172 to £180 for March movement, and for May it's £176 to £184 a tonne. November wheat is trading at £186 to £193 a tonne ex-farm. Feed barley is trading at £150 to £157 a tonne for March, and £155 to £162 a tonne for May. November feed barley is worth £168 to £175 a tonne. Oilseed rape is trading at £430 a tonne for March approximately, and feed beans are trading at £220 a tonne for May. For any inquiries, please do contact your local Openfield farm business manager. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Jerome.
The Farming Programme. 5 day forecast.
High pressure to start the week, so calm, settled, and hopefully, as my mum used to say, some good drying days. Up to 10 or 11 Celsius during the day, but down to 1 or 2 overnight under clear skies. Finally, it's Pancake Day on Tuesday, and there's a very topical protest in London, the latest to bring to the public's attention the risks to farming and food security of the changes in the latest budget. Here's organiser and Lincolnshire farmer Andrew Ward. Andrew, what's happening this week?
So on Tuesday is Pancake Day, Shrove Tuesday, and we thought it'd be a great idea to show the public and the government the value of machinery and how much capital investment is needed to put a simple 8 or 10 inch pancake on a plate. So we have got all the equipment that we can physically move on Whitehall, and we've got things like a sugar beet harvester because people put sugar on pancakes. We've got a forage harvester which cuts the grass to feed the cows. We've got a combine there as well, and we've got sugar beet drill, a sugar beet planter that puts the sugar beet seed in the ground, another machine that puts wheat seed in the ground. So all the things that you think we need for feeding, say, chickens to make the eggs for the pancakes, we've got the cows to make the milk as well, and then we've got the sugar and various things like that. Then on top of that, you need various other things like a milking parlour. You need poultry sheds. We can't obviously get those there, but we think the value of making a pancake or the infrastructure and equipment needed is somewhere between £4 and £5 million of investment needed. And so we're getting all the movable things into London at Whitehall. We're going to congregate. People can congregate from 11 a.m. but we're going to move off at 12, and we're going to move from Whitehall to Trafalgar Square. We're then going to go down Northumberland Avenue towards the Thames, then along Embankment towards Westminster. At the lights, turn right, and we're going to finish at Westminster Lawns at Westminster Square. And we are going to be having some people there cooking pancakes and giving free pancakes out to the public and to MPs. And we aim to finish by 3 p.m.
Now, can farmers listening to this still get involved, still take part?
Absolutely. We'd like as many people to come as possible. Please don't come on any machinery or tractors. We've got all that sorted out. Because this equipment is really large, we have got fairly strict guidelines from the Met Police that we must follow. So we don't want any other equipment coming there. But we are asking people to come on foot and support us on foot, and follow the route with us that I've just explained, which would be really good to walk around everywhere with all the machinery and engage with the public. Because the biggest thing is that a lot of this machinery is really eye-catching, and the public will be stopping and looking at us. And I think it's really important, as we all walk past them, that we stop and engage the public and talk to them about food and machinery and costs. And at the minute, we have got huge public support, and I think it's very important we keep that.
OK, so somebody wanting to get involved, where do they go for information, Andy?
If you go on the Farming Forum there and just go onto there, there is a link into there where you can register if you want to register your name. Or if you don't want to register, just get a train and just head down on Tuesday morning, get to Whitehall for 11 o'clock. So you can either register if you want to put your name on it, and then that will alert you. We'll have your details for any future events. Otherwise, just get a train or drive down, and we'll see you in London at Whitehall at 11 a.m.
All right. Well, let's hope it's suitably supported, which I'm sure it will be. Head to the Farming Forum for all the details. Andrew Ward, thank you very much again, and good luck.
Thank you ever so much, Steve, and thanks for your support as always.
Just a quick reminder that you can subscribe to the Farming Programme podcast for free, and the latest edition will hit your inbox as if by magic every Sunday morning at 7. Next week, we're out with Tractors into Schools, reporting from the Low Carbon Ag Show and hearing the inspiring story of one young new entrant into farming. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.